Thyself therefore and anoint thee, and put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down unto the floor. Make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking. And it shall be when he lieth down that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie. And thou shalt go in and uncover his feet, and lay thee down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do. And she said unto her, All that thou sayest unto me, I will do. And she went down into the floor, and did according to all her mother-in-law bade her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn. And she came softly, and uncovered his feet, and laid her down. And it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid, and turned himself. And behold, a woman lay at his feet. And he said, Who art thou? And she said, I am Ruth thine handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman. And she said, Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch that thou followest not young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, fear not, I will do to thee all that thou requirest. For all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. And now it is true that I am thy near kinsman. Howbeit there is a kinsman nearer than I. Tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning, that if he will perform unto thee the part of a kinsman, well, let him do the kinsman's part. But if he will not do the part of a kinsman to thee, then will I do the part of a kinsman to thee. As the Lord liveth, lie down until the morning. And she lay down at his feet until the morning. And she rose up before one could know another. And he said, Let it not be known that a woman came into the floor. Also he said, Bring the veil that thou hast upon thee and hold it. And when she held it, he measured 6 measures of barley and lay it on her, and she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, Who art thou, my daughter? And she told her all the man had done to her. And she said, These 6 measures of barley gave he me. For he said to me, Go not empty unto thy mother-in-law. Then said she, Sit still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will fall. For the man will not be in rest until he have finished the thing this day. Then went Boaz up to the gate, and sat him down there. And behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake came by, unto whom he said, Ho, such a one, turn aside, sit down here. And he turned aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city, and said, Sit ye down here. And they sat down. And he said unto the kinsman, Naomi that is come again out of the country of Moab, selleth a parcel of land which was our brother Elimelech's. And I thought to advertise thee, saying, Buy it before the inhabitants and before the elders of my people. If thou wilt redeem it, redeem it. But if thou wilt not redeem it, then tell me that I may know. For there is none to redeem it besides thee, and I am after thee. And he said, I will redeem it. Then said Boaz, What day thou buyest the field of the hand of Naomi, thou must buy it also of Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance. And the kinsman said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar my own inheritance. Redeem thou my right to thyself, for I cannot redeem it. Now this was the manner in former time in Israel concerning redeeming and concerning changing. For to confirm all things, a man plucked off his shoe and gave it to his neighbor, and this was the testimony in Israel. Therefore the kinsman said unto Boaz, Buy it for thee. So he drew off his shoe. And Boaz said unto the elders, and unto all the people, Ye are witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's, and all that was Chilion's, and Mahlon's, of the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of Mahlon, have I purchased to be my wife, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance, that the name of the dead be not cut off from amongst his brethren, and from the gate of his house. Ye are witnesses this day. And all the people that were in the gate and the elders said, We are witnesses. The Lord make the woman that is come into thine house like Rachel and like Leah, which two did build the house of Israel, to do worthily in Ephrathah, to be famous in Bethlehem. And let thy house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar built, bare unto Judah, of the seed which the Lord shall give thee of this young woman. So Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife. And when he went in unto her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son. And the woman said to Naomi, Blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. And he said unto thee, And he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life, and a nourisher of thine own age. For thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons, hath borne him. And Naomi took the child, and laid it in her bosom, and became nurse unto it. And the woman, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, There is a son born to Naomi. And they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now these are the generations of Pharez. Pharez begat Hezron. Hezron begat Ram. Ram begat Amminadab. Amminadab began Nahshon. Nahshon begat Salmon. And Salmon begat Boaz, and Boaz begat Obed. And Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David.
What seems to be an essential fabric, if you will, throughout this book is love. Is love of Ruth for Naomi, and Naomi for Ruth. You see love for Boaz for his workers, or for his workers for Boaz for Ruth, and for Naomi. And that love leads them to do the right thing, as people say nowadays. They don't just do the right thing, just to do the right thing. They're motivated by love to do the right thing. And that includes taking care of appearances and doing things proper in order. It's beautiful. There's love. There's really love everywhere here in every situation. There's love of Boaz for the nearer kinsman. And it's beautiful to see. My brother Bruce alluded to it in his address this afternoon about John's ministry. And Paul and John, there's parts in Paul's ministry where he really brings out what we might call John's ministry. And there's places in John's ministry where he brings out what we might call Paul's ministry, only briefly. But, Paul said in 1 Corinthians 13, essentially, if love is not the driving force, so to speak, it's all for naught. It doesn't matter how much faith, how good your doctrine is, how good your works are, how much of a martyr you are. Who could believe somebody could give their body to be burned and it all be for naught? Paul said so. I have not love. So it's beautiful to see in this book how love, at every turn, you see love operate. Cause people to do the right thing. Brother Darrow this afternoon talked about the older women, mentioned the older women teaching the younger in the assembly to be lovers of their husbands and so on. And the older women, they've got a lot of experience and they know and understand men, and they kind of giggle at that, but it's essential, and it's an essential ministry. And where it's missing, problems, big problems occur. So, our older sister, Charlotte, mentioned a few times, both by name and alluded to during this conference, and she often thinks that her life is such a big failure, and she just gets down on herself and wonders how she could be a help to anybody. But it's actually been more of a help to many of us than she could even imagine. Because as someone somewhere said, you learn a lot more from your failures than you do from your successes. And But Naomi, you know, she knows and she understands men and she's able to give advice. She knows what Boaz is going to do, and she's able to predict his behavior. And that's not, again, that's nothing to giggle about. It's become something very valuable. Equips her to be able to steer, as it were, move in the right direction. Help her to do the right thing.
Is there anyone who could give us some help on what transpires here with Ruth and Boaz and the instructions that Naomi gives to her? You know, I think if this was just read by the natural mind, we could, you know, might jump to a conclusion of an inference of something wrong, but we know, I believe by faith, that what takes place here, there's no impropriety at all. But I have to confess, I don't understand all that is displayed here. It's certainly prophetic. I can't help but think of this heap of grain that Boaz lies down upon, thinking of that corn of wheat that fell into the ground and died, and it's brought forth in fruitful abundance, and he shall see the travail of his soul and be satisfied. But I don't know if there's anyone that could give us some help on that. Maybe someone who's a little shy to speak up, but has a better understanding than maybe some of us who aren't so shy to speak up.
I can't confess that I don't understand the background to it. It doesn't seem to have been kind of an acknowledged custom of sorts, because Boaz is very concerned that she leave discreetly, let it not be known that a woman was on the floor, really their workplace where they slept there while the harvest was going on. But just stepping back from it, what she's really doing is making it known that she is available to him for the relationship. And we can certainly apply that to ourselves. Of course, we know that, as the Lord could say, I am, we could say, I am found of them that sought me not. But we think we're finding the Lord or coming to the Lord or looking for the Lord, and we find out later we were drawn by him. But here she comes, and you know that the ball is put into his court, so to speak, because she makes it known that she is available or agreeable to the relationship that might be able to happen.
The other thing I've kind of enjoyed in connection with it is that, like Esther, she didn't require anything of the keeper of the wardrobe, but she let him make the choice of what she would be arrayed in when she went into the king. And so the picture that would have been before Ahasuerus was, here's one who doesn't want her own will. She wants what I want. And just the opposite of Vashti, who didn't want anything to do with his will and wanted just what she wanted. And so there's nothing so attractive to Christ as a display of his own putting aside, or you might say, his desire and perfect oneness in the will of the Father, to see that in his own here below, would desire that it be his will, not their own, in every aspect of life. And when he sees that, there's something that's very attractive to him. And so Naomi, with wisdom that Ruth didn't have, gives her directions in such a way that she would be found to be attractive to Boaz. If she had gone in her own wisdom, she might not have done anything in this way or arrayed herself in that way. But in completely yielding her own will in the matter, she says, all that thou sayest unto me, I will do. And you know, Vashti was a Gentile. Esther was a Jew. And it's a picture of the restoration of the Jewish people in a coming day, that the Gentile bride, so to speak, Gentiles have been brought into favor, but really have been lifted up in pride and self-will, are going to be cut out, and the natural branches are going to be grafted in that and partake of that root and fatness once again, that line of blessing in this earth that God began with Abraham. And so I've wondered if in that way too, what you have here is a picture of the loveliness of that remnant to Christ. Now come to him, not seeking her own will, but seeking to be displayed in whatever and come in whatever character would be pleasing and acceptable to him. And so he's going to find them in that way, and it's going to rejoice his heart.
Remember the last time you heard, "All thou sayest I will do"? That was when Israel said, "All that Jehovah says, I will do." And then the law came in to show them that they couldn't. So I'm just saying that in connection with what you're suggesting. I hope I'm not just playing intellectual games in my own mind, but it did strike me, those words, "All that thou sayest unto me, I will do." And now she's able to. You know, in the restoration of Israel, it says he writes his law in their hearts, right? Or writes his law in their hearts. So the next time, they'll be able to do Israel. Is that right? I mean, when Israel's restored, and now it's different. He puts his spirit in them, he writes his law in their hearts, and now they can do all that he says. So maybe. Very different than the last time we heard that all we would say we would do it, and they write off the package. Now she says, the very next verse says, "So she went down to the floor and did according to all that her mother had done."
I think if you count them out, there's like 7 downs in this chapter. The first one is verse 3, "Get thee down to the floor," and verse 6, "She went down," the end of verse 7, "Laid her down," so on. There's a series of downs, and it just seems to be something connected with the humility of this Gentile woman. You think of another Gentile woman who came to the Lord and looked for a blessing, and she was proved, and he said, you know, "It is not meet to take the children's meat and cast it unto dogs." And her answer was so beautiful. How that goes, if the dogs eat the meat that falls from the children's table. She was not offended by taking that place. She was already there. He didn't have to put her there. She was already there, and the exchange manifests that. And it's just a beautiful blessing that comes from that. And so with Ruth, she just goes down into a low place. And now the ball, so to speak, is in Boaz's court. And it's beautiful, as Daryl was saying, that you know, her Naomi's discernment starts to increase, and she starts to get kind of it's catching hold. Her faith is growing, and her aspirations are rising higher. And she says, "Oh, the man will not be at rest until he finished the thing this day." And, you know, the spiritual excitement or aspirations are growing. So. But it starts with this humbling, because it's a principle of God. He would humble himself, should be exalted.
In that Syrophoenician, she says one other thing. She says, "Yes, Lord." And I enjoy a comment that we have in the book of John. If we could look at John's Gospel. It's a similar comment to what we have in our fifth verse in John's Gospel, the second chapter, the advice that the mother of the Lord gives to the servants in verse 5 of John chapter 2. His mother saith unto the servants, whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. Well, think of that in our chapter. We have in the 14th verse that the deportment of Ruth, it says that she lay at his feet until the morning. Well, the morning would speak to us of that daybreak, that moment when the Lord will come. And it's a beautiful deportment that the word to have, too, is to be at his feet. In the same way that Ruth was, to be at his feet. To be at his feet until the morning. But what is the deportment? What is that which should characterize us in order to be properly there at his feet until the morning? It's what we have in those earlier verses. And so the third verse says, wash thyself therefore. Well, there's a personal cleanliness that is appropriate for us to have in our personal lives as we are going to be in that deportment of waiting for the Lord to come and to being at his feet until the morning. And as you brought before us in that third verse as well, to get thee down to the floor, to have that characteristic of being in a humble manner before the Lord. But it says here too, in between those two things, we have washed thyself therefore and anoint thee, and put on thy raiment upon thee. Putting on the raiment would be perhaps, as we see, the apostle brings out that adornment of the sister to be arrayed in with a meek and a quiet spirit. Well, those things are all appropriate, aren't they, for those of us who are believers to simply be at his feet until the morning.
You can see how it's almost progression of a believer. You know, she had interacted with Boaz as her provider, one who showed her kindness. She gleaned in his field and took provision. You know, and you can think of believers that, or I shouldn't say believers, those that come in and they enjoy things that the Lord provides and such, but there comes that point in time in which they have to be encouraged to have that personal relationship with their provider. And so Ruth goes and she prostrates herself, as it were, before that one. She wants that intimate relationship now, not just as provider, but as one that could bring forth fruit. And she lays there all night. But he won't, as it were, reveal her. He wants it to be a known thing. He waits till the morning and before witnesses and shows her, no, I have purchased her, and she will now be my bride and such. You can think of those who come into the assembly or amongst saints and how they need to be encouraged to not only enjoy the vision of the Lord. You know, we have in John 6 how the Lord rebukes those that came, says, you came to me because you were fed. But he had much more for them. And so Naomi here, she sees that it's that time in which they need to know not only him as a provider, but him as a kinsman, one who could redeem and bring forth fruit and give her really a blessed hope.
When life, as I think that's maybe how Mr. Garvey translates it, there wasn't his like. And so with Christ and the bride that God the Father has preparing for him, it's going to be his like. And he's going to see a reflection in her of himself. It's not like today we say opposites attract. It's his like. And so I just enjoyed this too. What she says to Boaz is when he awakes, she says, spread therefore, in verse 9, thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman. That, Mr. Garvey says, wing. Could be wing. Well, where did she hear that? She heard that in chapter 2. Verse 12, the Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust. She learned something, didn't she? You know, I think of Elisha when he was following Elijah, and Elijah tested his faith and his love and told him to go back. He said, as the Lord liveth and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. You know, he heard those exact words many, many years later from a woman who came to him, and she said, "As thy soul liveth, as the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee." He saw a reflection of his own heart in hers. You know, and there was an attraction there, that and an enjoyment of fellowship between them that was very, it was his like, so to speak. And so I think with Ruth here, it's his like. There's an attraction in his heart for her because she's presented to him, and even her speech is a reflection of himself in that way.
So now as we get into chapter 4, we have an issue. There's a nearer kinsman. Naomi had wished for both of her daughters-in-law's rest. And it looks like Boaz is now willing that Ruth would really be brought into rest. But it says at the end of chapter 3, the man will not be in rest until he has finished the thing this day. So, in a manner of speaking, it could be said that our need and the depth of our depravity, coupled with the love of God, put God to work. And so the Lord Jesus could say, "My Father worketh hitherto, and I work." There was a work that needed to be done because there's something that needed to be addressed. This near kinsman is probably a picture of the law. The law can't bring into blessing without still being the law. It would have to be inconsistent with itself to bring a person that has sinned and has fallen short into blessing. It's like the hymn that we sometimes sing at the gospel meeting about the troubled soul runs to the mountain, but that mountain is no hiding place. You know, and in another justice, the hymn writer put it, hath withstood the purposes of love. So Boaz has a serious issue now that he has to take up. The 10 elders are brought, and the nearer kinsman that has a claim, his claim has to be addressed. When it's his turn to step up, and he has, you might say, the first rights, he says, "You know, if I try to redeem this," how does he put it there? "I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar mine own inheritance." What does that mean when Boaz steps forward to redeem the inheritance? He really is, so to speak, marring his own inheritance. Because just as with the Lord, it wasn't just a free thing for him to redeem us. No price had to be paid. In the parables in Matthew 13, the man has to sell all that he has. I'm sorry. In the parables in Matthew 13, the man has to sell all that he has to buy the field. And in the next parable, the pearl of great price, he has to sell all that he has. For me, it wouldn't be a great thing to sell all that I have. I don't even own a house right now. But for him to sell all that he had, when you think the riches the man Christ Jesus had because of who he is. Unparalleled.
Think of the apostle as he wrote to the Corinthians, and his desire was that he would present them as a chaste virgin to Christ. The only person that we find in the Word of God that's called the virtuous woman is Ruth. We don't read of anybody else in the Word that's called a virtuous woman. And I just so appreciated that the people who, you know, Boaz comes and he sits in the gate, and there are those that are they're coming into the gate, but Boaz his influence is such that there's great interest in this, and so it says all the people. So everyone gathers to the gate here to see what's happening, and the kinsman is there, and Boaz is there, and Boaz says, "You know, do you want the inheritance of Elimelech? Do you want the inheritance of Malon?" "Well, yeah, he wants that inheritance." So then Boaz says, "Well, you know, you can have that inheritance, but you got to take Ruth too." Well, He didn't want to take over, he didn't want to mar his inheritance. And it's interesting that the people, they make this commendation. They say, they look at the situation and they have such an appreciation for Boaz that they want great Boaz's house to be like the house of, you know, they could have picked anyone in Israel, but they don't. They say, and they pick another one who had an inheritance that was marred. They say, let your house be like the house of Pharaoh, whom Tamar bare unto Judah. And you think, well, where did that come from? And so you go back to the 38th of Genesis and you look at that history of Judah and you think, what a disaster that is, and how can anything possible good come out of that? But no, the people understood. And so they say, let your house be like the house of Pharaoh, whom Tamar bare unto Judah. Beautiful to see that. And if you follow that through, I believe that household is the household of Caleb, who was brought into blessing through Hezron. Time is going on, but the end of the book, the end of the chapter, the last word is written. As we had earlier, the Moabite was not to come into the congregation of Israel till the 10th generation. Well, if you do the math here, and you start with Obed, and you count through the generations in verses 17 to 22, we have 10 generations. And we find that David is not able to build the temple. And so he comes into that position, but how we have brought before us earlier, there was that one that David prepared for, and so that, as you brought before us, Steve, that millennial reign of Solomon, so beautiful to see that is prepared for by David.
Could we sing number 3 in the appendix? And now my famished soul is fed, a feast of love for me is spread. Feed upon the children of Israel, O Lamb God, to me. Number 3 in the back of the book.
Psalm 138. Verse 2. I will worship toward thy holy temple and praise thy name for thy loving kindness and for thy truth. For thou hast magnified thy word above all thy name. Then 1 Corinthians 11. Part of verse 7, the last part. But the woman is the glory of the man. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. For this cause ought the woman to have power on her head, because of the angels. And then just the last part of verse 26. Ye do show the Lord's death till he come. Shall we just
ankle.